This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Many thanks to Dave Clawson, who joined us last hour from Switzerland. Deke's feeling good about life, trying to stay everybody healthy and ready to roll. I think the Deke's got a chance to go on an early run and create some headaches for people, but we'll get thin. Many thanks to Dave Clawson, though, joining us. That was great.
All right, 844-SAY-ACCN. About an hour and a half ago, we hatched all-time teams, and this Paul Zeiss yesterday was with us from Pittsburgh, and conversations about Florida State, Miami over the weekend, Pittsburgh through the Hall of Fame, things of that nature. All-time teams, and our staff went and lobbied up for six schools, Virginia Tech, Clemson, Syracuse, Florida State, Pittsburgh, and Miami, and we put together lists for those schools. Now, it doesn't mean we're excluding everybody else in the ACC. Those were just the six that we kind of threw together. Now, we talked about bracketing this stuff and who would be the best team. Now, you know, if we want to dive into that deep end, we'll do that. But we did have some fun laying these out. And clearly, Pittsburgh and Miami, Mark, are the two teams that, if you look at it on paper, and that's where this game has to be played, by the way, on paper, Pittsburgh and Miami look pretty stout now on both sides.
I thought if we were going to rank these bad boys, I would have Miami and Pitt 1 and 1A. And I told you, I would pay. I even would reach in and pay to watch the Miami all-time defense take on the Pitt all-time offense. That would be a ridiculous matchup. The offensive line play, defensive line, incredible. And when you put these teams together – I mean, there are just certain teams that just jump out at you. You go, man, they've had a bunch of great players. But, again, that bar bet we told you about last week when it comes to the Pro Football Hall of Fame, from an ACC perspective, Miami and Pittsburgh have put nine players into the Hall. Syracuse has put in eight. Those are the top three teams in the ACC.
There's Jim Druckenmiller meeting his demise with Ray Lewis in Blacksburg. And, of course, you can't have a highlight without Sean Taylor.
Right.
Or, for that matter, Ed Reed. I mean, just name after name after name. Incredible. And you know when you have discussions about it that it becomes like Shady McCoy not on the list for Pittsburgh and Ken Dorsey, the quarterback ahead of Vinny Testaverde, Jim Kelly, or Bernie Kosar. You know you've got a good story. But we've got some calls, too, at 844-SAY-ACC. And let's go to let's go to Mo in Texas to start us off here. Hi, Mo. Good morning.
Hey, guys. How y'all doing today?
We're good. What's up?
Good.
Hey, I was calling because, you know, I'm from the state of Virginia, even though I live in Houston, Texas, and I think that y'all would be remiss not to put UVA. I would take the all-time team against any of those teams that you named. And if you don't mind, I could go through a few names on offense and defense, and then I'd like to just hear what you guys think about it.
Sure.
All right, go for it.
All right.
Okay. At my quarterback position, you know, I would love Sean Moore, great UVA, great. Tiki Barber.
Sure.
Thomas Jones, Terry Kirby. I'd be remiss to leave out Bill Dudley, Herman Moore, Heath Miller. Ray Roberts was a great offensive lineman. DeBrickashaw Ferguson, great offensive lineman. Mm-hmm. Eugene Monroe, Brandon Alberts, and Jim Dombrowski on my offense. On my defense, I would have Chris Long, Patrick Kearney, Chris Slade, Chris Canty, James Ferrier. Ray Savage was a great linebacker. Jamie Sharper, Angelo Crowell, Mike Frederick, Rondé Barber, Anthony Poindexter. And I was just thinking about, what did you guys think about those lineups I just spoke about?
I appreciate your homework, number one, and your devotion to UVA. And that is a good group. And like I said, no matter what team you root for in the league, you'll go back home and have some fun and just cut up with this. And you'll come up with a pretty good group. That's a strong list from UVA. Got to tell you. Better than anticipated.
That's a great call, Mo. I like your offense. I like your defensive front.
That's
Long, Kearney, and Slade.
But the secondary?
The secondary with Poindexter and Rondé Barber. Pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Not bad.
Yeah. That's a really good one. All right. Let's
By the way, Wes,
We didn't ask, do every school because we were looking at the Hall of Fame list.
Let me ask a question. For argument's sake, I'm going to put you on the spot. Tomorrow, the Virginia Tech all-time team's taking on the UVA all-time team that Mo just put together. Who do you like? Who do you like there? Who do you like there? FPI gives Virginia a 50.1% chance to win the game.
Yeah, sure they do. That's exactly right. I tell you what, Mo makes a really good – it's a really good offense. It's a really good offense. He had a lot of running backs. I mean, we had Tiki Barber, Thomas Jones, Terry Kirby, and Bullet Bill Dudley. We had a lot of running backs.
I'm going to give Virginia Tech the edge. You know why? Michael Vick. I think Michael Vick's a tiebreaker there. But both teams are loaded now.
Sure. No doubt.
Here's Mike.
Here's the Virginia Tech offense. That's a pretty good unit now.
Yeah.
Defensively against Virginia, I'd give the Hokies the edge. And offensively, see, I'd give both offenses the edge here.
Oh, that's good.
Now, that should, I like that, his, that I should like settle his front it. On defense. Yeah, I mean, all right, let's go. I want to take Bill in South Carolina. Bill, you're next. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
I got to tell you, I have a football signed by Bobby that's in my living room. It's my shrine. My daughter gave it to me for Christmas one year from Randy Golight, who played for Bobby. But the question I have, and nobody seems to bring it up, is when Bobby – good morning. How's everybody?
Good. Just talk to us. You got us. Go ahead, Bill.
Just talk to us, Bill. Okay. Don't talk to the TV. There we go.
All right. I have a football from Bobby that was signed by him for my daughter one Christmas. But the question I have is, do you remember the play that Bobby called where no lineman moved? They hiked the ball and not one line moved. Nobody talks about that play, but it was unbelievable.
Right. It was done. The story behind the lineman play is based on procedure calls and movement by the defensive line. And he and the longtime offensive line coach, Jim Gladden, I think, are the guys that got involved in creating this. And it actually started, I think, when Mark Rick was the offensive coordinator there. They felt like if they taught their linemen to hold, if they saw a defensive guy move, the center would snap the ball and the lineman would hold and they'd run a play. And if the penalty flag was thrown, fine. If not, fine. It was going to be a free play because the defense was either offside or in the neutral zone. So, they were the first school to do it. They also did it on intention at times to throw a screen pass. They put the ball in the flat on either side of the quarterback. But, yeah, Jim Gladden, the longtime offensive coordinator, and I think Mark Richt was also involved in that because Mark Richt also taught it at Georgia. The other thing that Mark Richt perfected, I think, and we'd have to talk to Coach about this next time we get him back, is the play-action fake. Remember the 99-yard pass we showed earlier in the week, the Winky. Highlight of the 99-yard throw against Clemson? Winky goes back and fakes the handoff, and when he does, he's got the ball in his stomach. He fakes with an empty hand to the running back, and he freezes everybody because they think the running back's got it, and it gives him enough time. David Green, who played for Mark Richt at Georgia, was the absolute very best I've ever seen. He was better than Winky at doing it. But those are the two things that that you're talking about there, Bill.
Of course, the play that we showed yesterday was Winky doing it at his one-foot line. And I told you the story that we took our Southern Fried Football Tour down there for that game, and we were sitting in the end zone, and I was literally looking straight at Winky. He was looking at me. I'm like, he's got the ball. And these guys from Clemson understand the quarterback 6 yards deep in the end zone with the ball in his stomach. Then he turned around and bam, 99-yard touchdown passes.
Slung it.
Bobby Bowden beat his son by 100 that night in Tallahassee. Let's go to Jim up in New York. Jim, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning, guys. This is Tallahassee Tim in upstate New York, a big Florida State fan. I go back to the times when I was an 11th grader and Bobby Bowden just came on board. There was more people for a concert than this guy named Bobby Bowden. But, guys, what Bobby Bowden did to Florida State, he went on the road and he had five games back. I believe it was 1979, guys. And he went 3-2. He became the road warrior. But his greatest team, I think, was the 85 team. That team was loaded with Ron Simmons. You had all unbelievable guys running the offense. You had Mickey Andrews' defense. But what you guys have done to Bobby Bowden just brought back so many great memories, guys. And it's been laughter and crying for the last 2 days. Now, I've been on vacation, but I also think Jimbo Fisher's team, when they won the championship 6 years ago, was really, really good, too. But I say any team that Bobby Bowden had from 1980 to 1995 is great.
Can't argue. I mean, the numbers speak for themselves.
Nope.
Speak for themselves. Legendary coach.
Well, first of all, 85 team had Deion Sanders as a freshman. The offense had Chip Ferguson at quarterback. Danny McManus was the backup. Tony Smith was the running back. Victor Floyd was also a running back on that team. Young Sammy Smith. Hassan Jones was the wide receiver. Caught 34 balls that year to lead Florida State, by the way. 34 catches led Florida State. You think they ran it? Here's why they ran it. They had Pablo Lopez, who Coach Rick speaks of. His passing was significant in his life. Jamie Dukes was on the offensive line. The defensive line in 85, Nichols, Williams, Harp, Stroud, Fred Jones, a linebacker, Martin Mayhew in the secondary. Yeah, that's a pretty good squad. I think you could win with those guys.
And he did. A lot.
Yeah. 9-3. They went 9-3. They were 15th in the poll that year.
That was just the start, right? I mean, 87 is when the streak really began, finishing in the top four for 14 consecutive years at 10-plus wins every single year. You know, like we said, when you start going through the numbers when it comes to Bobby Bowden and Florida State football, they almost look like typos, right? It almost looks like, I mean, wait a minute, there's a zero or a one in the loss column every year, right? It's just ridiculously good and consistent. He recruited well, and, man, he could coach him up. That's a good combination, and he proved it.
All right, so if we're going to go to a Final Four here.
Yeah.
We agree Miami and Pittsburgh are 1-2.
I think they're the two best.
2-1, depending on how you want to set it up.
Yeah, I think they're the best. I do. Now we're going to go.
I'm going to go Florida State, Clemson, 3-4 that order.
You're reading off my script because I agree with that. I do. I think those are the top four.
All right. No offense to Syracuse. No offense to Virginia Tech. I'm just taking Florida State and Clemson based on
Mo in Texas,
or 20 personnel.
Yeah, or Mo in Texas. He did a nice job with the Virginia lineup.
Mo did some work now. Yeah. Mo put some things on paper.
Yep.
And did a good job. Thank you, Mo.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham, Mac Brown, coming up here in about 10 minutes. Look forward to having Coach Brown on the program. Tar Heels feeling good about life, and they should be, because they are a preseason top 10 team, according to the coaches. How about that, Wes? Top 10.
Coaches poll is out, yeah.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, preseason top 10. That's right, coaches. Clemson's 2. Carolina 9, Miami 16. Those are the three ACC teams. Got to be honest with you, Pack. I thought NC State might get in the back end of this. I was a little surprised not to see the Wolfpack in the back end.
Well, Ole Miss and Coastal Carolina got their spot. Like I said yesterday on the radio, anybody that gets upset or frustrated or disappointed when that poll comes out, you truly need to check yourself. It's the coaches' poll. I promise you this. I'll guarantee you this. That poll, which was released yesterday, will have absolutely 100% nothing to do with the college football playoff. I promise you Zero.
That's right.
So it just gives you something to chew on for 24 hours. Hey, man, we're ranked. How about you guys? That's about what this is worth, quite frankly. And, yeah. You know, if a North Carolina guy wants to rag an NC State, that's fine. Guess what? You guys are going to settle this thing in November. So don't worry about it. Don't get upset if you don't think, hey, Clemson fans, we should be number one. Don't worry about it. Go take care of Georgia. That's what you're supposed to do. Tar Heel fans, hey, we're in the top 10 for the first time in the preseason since 1997. Tremendous. It doesn't mean anything. Miami, hey, I can't believe North Carolina's in front of us. Shh. You'll have a chance to deal with it. You'll see North Carolina later on. NC State, Boston College, Pitt, anybody and their brother walking their dog thinks you should be a top 25 team, chill out. Yep. You'll get a chance to prove it. You do. You got plenty of time. So don't get upset with the coaches poll. And when the AP folks get together and try to copy that list, don't get upset with that either, because I guarantee you there'll be somebody in the top 10 by the end of the year. You won't be able to find them in a top 25 poll. Happens almost every year. So don't worry about it.
Good point.
Don't worry about it.
A couple of things of note. You've already mentioned the one. Carolina ranked in the preseason top 10 for the first time in 24 years since they were 7th and 8th in the preseason poll back in 1997. The other thing off the clarity piece here is that Georgia Tech's schedule, legit, because the Jackets are going to face four teams ranked in the preseason coaches poll. In fact, preseason top 10. Clemson, Georgia, Notre Dame, and Carolina. So Jeff Collins does have the toughest schedule.
Wrong. I'm disagree with that statement. You know who's got the toughest schedule? The worst team. The worst team in the country plays the toughest schedule. Now, you know, you knew okay. Georgia Tech. Listen, even when Jeff Collins was on with us, he even said, hey, you know what? As players, as competitors, this is what you sign up for. You can't wait to see Clemson, Georgia, North Carolina. I mean, that's part of the gig, right? I mean, as a competitor, you want to test yourself against the best. But I always hear that so-and-so's got the toughest schedule. No, the team with the toughest schedule in the country is a team that can't beat me, you, and nine other guys. Whoever that team is, they've got the toughest schedule. They can't play dead in a cowboy movie. So, I mean, that's the team who's got – and that's not Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech's better than that. But, man – there'll be some tough Saturdays, though, Wes. No doubt.
One note in the coach's top 25, not a lot of experience, especially at quarterback, Mark. ACC does have all those QBs coming back, 13 of them across the board in the league. Be interested to see. And I thought Dave Clawson said this is going to be the most exciting year of college football in a long time because of the experience returning. Well, the ACC brings back a position where – quite frankly, not a lot of experience nationally returns, and that's at the QB spot.
Well, if you do not have a guy who can play quarterback, there is a limit to kind of the success you can have. This league, in my opinion, even though we haven't seen a game yet, given what's coming back, there's not another conference in the country that can match the experience at quarterback as the ACC. And I think your point about Dave Clawson's comments last hour were spot on. When a head football coach tells you, between super seniors, what you've got coming back at quarterback, college football should be out of sight across the board. And I think Coach is 100% right. I think he's absolutely spot on.
Yeah. I think this particular spot, by the way, is a major advantage for the ACC. Yeah. Now, how does it play out? We'll see. But on paper today, I would tell you, based on the top 25 and really the way it sets up nationally, seems to be a big plus for the Atlantic Coast Conference. All right. One note here before we get to the break. According to the All-State Playoff Predictor, Pat.
Not to be confused with FPI, is this another clandestine organization that we need to deal with? What is this again?
I don't know. Macri would have to answer that question. I'm not familiar with the folks at the All-State Playoff Predictor office. I don't even know where it is. So perhaps. I'm not even quite sure how that all works in conjunction.
Are they tied into Oklahoma and Texas going to the SEC, this organization? Is this – I mean, who are these people? Where are they coming up with all this stuff? Who are these folks?
I don't know.
All right, what were you going to tell me?
I don't know. Only eight teams have at least a 10% chance to reach the college football playoff this season.
Get out of here. Would you leave? Would you please leave? Get out of town with this nonsense. Oh, by the way, shocking that Texas is one of the eight. I rest my case. Come on. Texas is back, apparently. They haven't beaten anybody in 100 years. Texas is back. Texas hasn't won anything since Mac left. Please.
All right.
Don't give me Texas in the college football playoff. I mean, how about – here's an idea. How about somebody other than Oklahoma win the Big 12? How about somebody doing that? Iowa State? Are they on that list? No? Great.
Yeah. No. I didn't see Iowa State.
I didn't see them. But I saw Texas. Hook them.
All right.
Please, get out of here with that.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Packer and Durham just got a note handed to me. The Allstate predictor gives us a 100% chance of having Mac Brown on within the next 10 seconds. So they'll at least get that part right, which is good.
Well, let's go to Chapel Hill, shall we? I mean,
let's do it.
Let's get into the Keenan Football Center and talk to the head coach of the Dawg. Oh, look at the backdrop here. We got the Jordans all over the wall. We got the helmets. Man, it's looking good, Coach. You got this place ready to go for 2021, don't you?
I've got Coach Bowden with me right over my shoulder because of all the wonderful things he did for so many of us and the great memories that we've had. And we're so sorry that we lost a legend, but his legacy will last forever. I mean, that guy was so special. He would whip you with a smile and say, "Dadgummit, sorry, bud." Yeah. On his way out. So that was just Coach.
Yeah. Yeah. Before we get to your team, Coach, is there a story with Bobby? I mean, I know you probably got 100 of them, being a Florida State alum in the coaching business and all that stuff. But is there one that stands out to you, though, about Bobby Bowden?
Mark, there really are. He was wonderful to me, like most of the older coaches were. And that's why I love giving back to younger coaches. I would never call Coach without him calling me right back. And I'd say things like, we're having trouble winning the Oklahoma game. They've beaten us a few times in a row. You fight Florida's a rival. What do you do? And he said, just keep doing what you're doing. It'll be okay. And when your team gets tired of hearing about it and you're good enough, you'll beat them. Don't worry about it. Then we were out here before one of our games, and it was the big game. I think we were fourth and they were first. And Coach came out, and first thing he said, he looked around, he said, "I never thought I'd see this here, boy. This is really nice. It's really cool with all these people." And then he his back was hurting, and he had a stool that he would sit on during the games, and I'd been watching him sit on that stool, and I said, "Coach, my goal tonight is get you off that stool, man. I don't want you just sitting over there whipping our tail on the stool." And he says, "Gonna be a great game, Coach, but you ain't getting me off that stool." I didn't. He stayed on the stool the entire game.
He was something special.
Oh, man. You know what, though? Here's the thing, Coach, and you know what I mean by this. The legacy impact in your industry, that's an amazing standard. It's an amazing standard to chase. I mean, you're blessed to be back in Chapel Hill and have a second run at it, and it's almost like extending the first run, so you get a lot of those former players back that are able to connect. And I think one of the genuine pieces, and I told Dwight Hollier this when I saw him in Charlotte, I think one of the genuine pieces about your return to Carolina has been the return also of a lot of guys connected to Carolina. Very similar to what Hubert Davis has done, I think, with basketball. Connecting your program with guys who've been there. Bobby Bowden and Dean Smith and John Wooden are three names off the top of my head of guys that connect generations of players back to their institution.
Yeah, Wes, we've got eight guys on the staff that played for me, and six of them played in the NFL, so it's so much fun for me to regroup with those guys. And Coach Darrell Royal, who was like my older brother, my best friend, we lost him a few years ago, and he had dementia right before we lost him. And I remember we had him out for the guest coach to flip the coin for our Wyoming game to open the season. And it's Royal Memorial Stadium, and he didn't know where he was. He said, "Coach, where am I?" I said, "Coach, you're in your stadium. It's named after you." And then he went upstairs, and one of my best friends was sitting next to him, and he said, "Who's playing?" And They said, well, Texas and Wyoming are playing. He said, well, which one's which? Mm. So he didn't know anything. Mm. But he always remembered every ex-player's name. So when we look at our legacy, whether it's you guys being in the media business for so long, or whether it's all of us as coaches, our legacy is really relationships and people. And Coach didn't remember the stadium was named after him. He didn't remember he'd won 3 national championships. He didn't know he was one of the winningest coaches ever in the Hall of Fame. And he didn't care. But he would brighten up so much when one of those ex-players would walk in. And it would shock me that he would know who they were and when they played and how they did. And he'd ask them about the family. And it was just the weirdest thing in the world. But it left me with a forever memory that this is about relationships and this is about people. It's not about all the stuff that we worry about every day.
And Mac, you know what? That's true. Whether you're a football coach, whether you're an insurance guy, whatever the case may be, you know, when it gets right down to it, it's all about family and faith and relationships and treating people with respect. And, you know, and it's what it's all about at the end of the day. I mean, you know, everybody's going to have highs. Everybody's going to have lows. You're going to have successes. You're going to fall flat on your face. That's going to be true for everybody. But at the end of the day, you know what? There's certain foundations you better have. And your faith and your family better be part of that. No question.
Mark, there's no question. Right now, what I've got in my life is faith, family, and football. And my football family is an extension of our family. And that's it. I told the guys last night, my granddad told me, when somebody walks up and says, how are you doing? They really don't care. They're not asking you how you're doing. That's just a statement. So don't tell them, well, I got up this morning, I had a headache, and then I didn't get to do this, and then my car had a wreck, and then I lost the oil in the car, and I had to fix it, and nobody cares. So just say great and move on. And the guys laughed at me this morning. So at breakfast this morning, I said, how you doing? Great. I'm great, Coach. I am great. Because yesterday it was, I'm okay. I'm a little sore, and I'm stiff. Nobody cares, folks. Well, nobody cares unless it is that family that you're talking about, or yeah. You better be a really close friend. So don't waste people's time. Tell them all the problems you've got before they can go to something else.
All right. Well, let me ask you a question, and I do care about this answer. We got some practices under our belt. So what's this crew look like now? I mean, the media has jumped on the bandwagon all summer. You've made great strides since you've gotten back to Chapel Hill. So what have you seen based on the first couple practices?
Well, Mark, I'm proud that we have won the media game, and that's important. We went from 2 wins to a team that's being talked about as a team that could have a significant difference, make a difference in next year's season. So I've told the guys I'm proud of that. Don't take that lightly, because when the coaches have reached out and said these guys are much improved, that's a good thing. So it's not something to stick your chest out. It's not something to be arrogant about, but it's something to have a lot of pride in. So I take pride in what has happened in this program over the last 2 years. The truth is, we get into facts, is we've got everybody back but Chaz Surratt on defense. We've added some good recruits, so we should be better on defense than we've been the 2 years that we're here. The truth is, we lost 4 of the best skilled people in the country on offense, and the jury's still out on who's going to step up in those areas. And we're talented, but we're not as experienced. We're probably more like we were with those 2 years ago, or those 4 2 years ago, when you're talking about Daz Newsome and De'Ami Brown and Javonte Williams and Michael Carter. That's a load. That's over 4,000 yards worth of offense. So we can't just say, we're going to be fine. We'll be different. We're going to be a different offense than we were. We still have the trigger guy. We still got all the offensive linemen back for the 3rd year in a row, which is unbelievable. We got our tight end back. But those skill guys outside and the running backs need to step up. And here, 23 days from kickoff, we're still trying to work that out.
Okay, so does this come down to then a discussion about Ty Chandler, a discussion of Josh Downs, Choffrey Brown, all these other guys? Does it slow your installation? Does it slow what you and Coach Longo want to do? Or did you get enough – and I guess this ties back to the spring. Did you get enough done in the spring that you're able to keep your pace going with 23 days left to go before kickoff.
Yes, with your offensive line and your quarterback, we're not having to slow down our pace. In fact, I'll have to be careful in the third year of the same offense with most of the same players, and especially Sam Howell, the same quarterback, our tendency will be to do too much and put too much in with a couple of new guys we got to plug in. Ty Chandler's done a good job. Will he be better than the two we had last year? That's a load. Both those guys will be playing here in a month. They're playing now with NFL team. Sam Howell looks as good or better than ever. He hasn't changed any. Got more experienced. He's in better shape. He moves better. He gets it. He's a better leader than he was 3 years ago. So, obviously, he puts us in a position to do really well, but we got to get Bo Corrales back. We got to get Choffrey Brown in a position where he's very much like his brother. He's the fastest player on our team. Emory Simmons is playing well. Josh Downs looks like he's got a chance to be a special player. Antoine Green hasn't played very much. He's big. He's tall. He's fast. It's time. So we've got to get the timing with our receivers and our quarterbacks down, but the pieces are all there. It's our job to coach them up. And then you've got Ty Chandler, a young freshman that's an interesting dynamic coming in, was a quarterback at Richmond County last year. Caleb Hood is doing some good things. He will probably be in that rotation in 3 weeks. He's a 225-pound back that runs really fast. And then you've got DJ Jones coming out of Fayetteville that's really fast also, that broke his ankle before the Orange Bowl and didn't get to play. So we've got enough pieces there. We got a very difficult opener at Blacksburg. Virginia Tech it's been a tough team for North Carolina, but it's a tough place to play. Justin Fuente does a tremendous job. I'm sure they've got all of our positive publicity plastered all over the lockers in the locker room. And I would if I was them, and they're getting sick of hearing about North Carolina and how cute we are right now. But it'll be a fun opener in a tough game, and we'll know a lot more about who we are when we leave Blacksburg that night.
Coach, that's where I was going to go with you before you brought up going on the road to Virginia Tech. You know, and you've been part of great teams at North Carolina, national championship teams at Texas, played for one and won it, played for one and lost it. But those kind of teams are the ones that love to go on the road. And I've always thought that regardless we're talking about football, basketball, baseball, you pick a sport, it doesn't matter. The best teams love going on the road. And, you know, you've elevated the program since you got there. But you know what? You go to Florida State, you didn't handle success well last year. Now, Virginia has always been a bugaboo. It's always tough in Charlottesville. I think for your team to get to that next level, that first game, as you just pointed out, Lane Stadium, Enter Sandman, it's been 2 years since everybody got together. It is a great venue to play a football game. But the best teams love when people can't wait for them to get there, right? So with that said, have you talked to your team about, hey, the consistency on the road is the key to us getting to the next level?
Mark, we have. We constantly talk about trying to take the next step. We were a bad team when we got here. And then we were an okay team, an average team. And then last year we got to be a good team. But people say, well, you didn't win the Florida State game. Well, we didn't win all of them. So, and that's what we want to do, yes. But we are human, and we are learning, and we are growing. And then, Mark, you get into, with my 33 years, the philosophy of an opening ball game. Would you rather play a bad team at home and not show anything and screw up and kind of have a scrimmage and it doesn't matter? You're going to win anyway, so everybody's happy and leaves, and they all talk about how great we are. Mm-hmm. Or would you rather get a home game against a really good team and your kids work so hard all summer and there's a buzz with your fan base and the media because it's going to be a great opener? Or do you go on the road for that really good team like we are? And I think this is a good test for our team right now. We have gotten a lot of publicity. We are better. It's 100% we're better. But are we going to be able to replace the things we lost on offense and play better on defense? And we may be a different team. We may not be a high-scoring team as much as we were. We may be more of a defense and kicking game and still move the ball offensively. But to win, to be a great team, you've got to win, and you've got to win on the road. And that's it. We always say win at home first, And then when it went on the road, when we were here before Wes grew up with this, and then we went to Texas, they said, well, they can't win at home because we didn't win anywhere. And then after that, they said, well, let's start winning at home. Well, can't win on the road. Well, then you start winning on the road. Then you lose to Florida State and said, can't win the big one. Well, you got to win all of them at some point. We do understand that. So we're at the point where we won at home last year, except for Notre Dame. We won on the road in a better light than we had previously, but we still lost two games against Florida State, who was a talented team that we allowed them to play really well that night and get started. We got in a hole and couldn't get out. Virginia's probably about like we were last year, and it was a great game that came down to the last play of the game, and they had their quarterback back, and they played well at home. And then we got beaten down in the fourth quarter with two top five teams with Notre Dame and Texas A&M. So, Mark, we're constantly talking to our team about who we are, what's out there, what we're doing well, and what we need to fix. We're dreadfully honest with them. So, in fact, when I tell them you got beaten down in the fourth quarter against these two top five teams, so if you want to be a top five team, get stronger, get faster, we got to play more depth, and you got to play with more confidence. And all they do now is say facts. It's facts. We got you, yeah. Coach. We hear you, man. And that's where this team is, and I like this team.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of similarities to and maybe happened faster than most thought it would, but I think you've done a remarkable job when coming back to Chapel Hill of looking forward. You've always approached this going forward since you returned. I think in some ways, Coach, that's something that doesn't get discussed enough. You've been moving the thing forward, not thinking about what happened, you know, for the previous 10 years before. It's about what we're doing now in this bounce back time, and I think the previous 2 years show it.
Wes, you know, so many coaches now, and I was more aware of it when I was out in your position watching coaches, so many coaches now are afraid to say we've got a chance to be good. I don't know, and we don't have much depth, and, you know, we're struggling, and, you know, we're young. And Coach Roy used to tell me, if you're young and good, that's a good thing. If you're young and bad, man, you're about to get fired. So just being young ain't the answer. So I think the thing that I'm at a wonderful place in my life where I want us to be good. I want us to be positive. Mm. I want us to be a cool program. I want these kids to have fun. I want North Carolina fans to walk around with their chest stuck out because they're proud of their football program. And unless I'm doing that, they can't do it. And that's what we need to do. And I'm not afraid to embrace that we have a chance to be good. And we're proud of where we are and can't wait to take the next step. We've been a really good regional program with 7 and 8 wins. It's time for us now to move on. And I don't think when we lose Sam Howell next year, we'll just be a Sam Howell team. We've got good young quarterbacks, so I think we will continue to be a team that's a major factor in college football moving forward, and I'm proud of that.
All right. Coach, great to see you. Be well. Tell Sally hello.
Thank you, guys. I was going to say, Wes, in closing, we're trying to build a team, not a quarterback one-time wonder because Sam Howell's really good, and that's the thing that I'm proud of. We talk about that daily. And Sally's doing good. Oh, she's all pumped. She likes me as long as we're undefeated, so she's like the fans. My stock's good at home right now. I'm not home much. When I come home, she says, how's it going? I said, great. Just great.
Great.
Just,
that's it. Just great.
Just great. That's it. Great. Yeah.
You don't need to hear all the problems we've got, so we will do that. Thanks, guys. Appreciate you both and appreciate what you do for college football.
Thanks, Coach.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Final segment of show 436 is upon us here on Packer and Durham. There could be breaking news at 10:05. You just never know. Never know.
Yeah. Yeah. You remember when you went on vacation the first time to the Turks and Caicos?
Oh,
you remember
almost, that? Yeah, almost lost my life. Yes, I do remember that. Part of what has been a very, very colorful 2021 campaign for me this year. Amazing. Yes.
Yeah.
I do remember.
Well, you know, remember now that when Pac first went on vacation back in the early May. Part of the spring and summer, May, he put on Twitter he was wearing his Packer and Durham hat in the Turks and Caicos.
Yeah, there it is.
There it is. Yeah. Beautiful water in the Turks and Caicos.
Yeah.
Kenny Pickett, how much for the Packer and Durham hat? Asking for a friend. Packer, of course, also has an ACC Network hat, not available as well.
Correct.
For sale.
Right.
So, yesterday, somehow or another, at the football office at the University of Pittsburgh, look what showed up for Kenny Pickett.
Are you kidding me? You know what?
I saw this.
I saw this last night on Twitter, and I responded to the quarterback at Pitt and said, man, how do I get my hands on one of those?
Yeah, because everybody, hey, Kenny, look, we're glad you got it. In the words of the great Sergeant Schultz from Hogan's Heroes back in the 70s, I know nothing.
What warehouse are those things being held in up there in Bristol?
Tune into Packer and Durham weekday mornings from 7 to 10 Eastern for the best conversations about everything from the ACC. Find it on the ACC Network, SiriusXM Channel 371, and streaming on the ESPN app.